Well, good morning. I hope everybody's doing well. We have been in a series called Latest and Greatest, looking at the book of Colossians. And what we've been looking at is this idea that that somehow, some way, messages tend to leak, and they tend to leak into our theology. So up on the wall behind me, you see all these different messages, most of which are completely untrue. And just like we navigate things in our world, just because a new thought comes up, it doesn't mean it's right. So the theme of the series we've said is just because it's new doesn't mean that it's true. And that's the first thing there. If you want to jot some notes on your listening guide as we go, or you want to take notes on the LifePoint app as we move forward, that's the first thing. So just like we deal with that, Paul was dealing with the very same thing thousands of years ago as he talked to these Colossian Christians and wrote them this letter. And I've told you guys before that whenever we plan out a series, kind of pray about it, and Adam and Kale, the teaching pastors up at our Mount Vernon campus and our Delaware campus, we get together and we kind of parse out, you know, what passages are going to be with what days and those kinds of things. And so for this particular Colossian series, Kale was in charge of putting the passages together with the days. And that was kind of his job, his responsibility. So looking at the book of Colossians, Kale, he picked this verse for us to talk about today. Colossians chapter 3. Now, you just got to remember, Kale's only been married for about a year, okay? Here's what he chose. Colossians chapter 3, verse 18 says, "Wives, submit yourselves to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord." Happy Mother's Day. There you go. All the guys are like, "Way to go, Kale. Good job," right? When Kale put this together, I was like, "Man, we can't talk about this, right? On Mother's Day, we're not going to do that." And the more that I thought about it, the more I thought, you know what? This absolutely fits the context of the series, because you know, the parallel passage to Colossians is Ephesians chapter 5. And so in Ephesians 5, Paul talks about this same idea, and he talks about it in the context of mutual submission. Wives and husbands living in such a way, they're submitting, they're bending towards each other. And the reason that I think it's important to talk about and to deal with is there's this reality that I think Christianity gets a little bit of an unfair treatment, a little bit of a bad rap when it comes to womanhood and motherhood. And I understand that there have been people who've called themselves Christians for centuries, who've taken a verse like this, like Colossians 3:18, and they've used it in abusive ways, and they've applied it in ways that maybe the scripture wouldn't call for. And so today, what I hope we can do is I hope we can gain some clarity about what the scriptures really say about womanhood and motherhood. And to do that, we're going to go all the way back to the beginning of the scriptures, and we're going to jump in Genesis chapter 1. It says this: "So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them, and God said to them, 'Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the heavens, and over every living thing that moves on the earth.'" So the first thing there that you see is that God created men and women absolutely equal and absolutely different. That's what you see in Genesis chapter 1. You don't have to be a sociologist or a psychologist, you know, a Christian, non-Christian, to generally look at culture across all times and see at least that God has created men and women differently. Differently physically, at least. Or at least most men and women. I remember the first time that I went to the Arnold Classic downtown. It was 2007. I went down with a friend of mine. We're walking through the exhibit area. There's a guy standing there with his back turned to us. He looked like one of those big Swedish power lifters. He had kind of long flowing blonde hair. And I remember saying to my buddy, who's a former Mr. Ohio, by the way, I looked at him, I was like, "Man, that is a big dude." And all about that time, he turned and he said, "That's no dude." I'll show you the picture of the number one female power lifter in the world. So God creates almost all men and women, you know, different physically, right? Almost all men and women different physically. So how does that work? God puts Adam to sleep in Genesis, takes out a rib, fashions woman. Adam wakes up and he sees naked Eve standing there in the Garden of Eden. And he's like, "Wow." That's the Dean Folks translation of what happened there. And so what you see early on in Genesis is this reality that Eve without ever saying a word, impresses Adam how? With her beauty. Now, I want to be real careful here to say, I'm not in any way saying that women are just pretty faces. I'm not going down that track at all. And you can disagree with me if you want to, but I would say that we see in the context of the creation of woman across cultures and across times, and I'm not saying every woman is the same and every man is the same and it's always this way, but across cultures and across times, I think a core question that the majority of women are asking, sometimes actively and sometimes passively, is this question, is am I beautiful? Women are constantly in different ways asking that question. Like I said, you can disagree with me, but I think you just look at the culture. You look at the plastic surgery, diet, fad-laden, how do I look, cosmetic culture that we live in, and I think it proves itself out to be true that women are asking this question. So somehow, in the context of creation, God has uniquely tied women to the beauty of creation. Now, why did he do that? Well, you move on over to Genesis chapter 2 that gives us maybe a broader picture of what happened in the creation of woman. Verse 18 says this, "Then the Lord God said, 'It is not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helper fit for him.'" Now, whether it was intended this way or not, right or wrong, maybe it was spoken this way, maybe it wasn't, maybe I misheard it. But the way that I understood Genesis 2:18 to be taught to me whenever I was younger is it kind of worked like this. Like God makes Adam, and Adam's got a lot of really important stuff to do, right, in the Garden of Eden. As a matter of fact, Adam's got kind of too much to do. So God creates a helper for him. And while Adam goes out and does the really, really important stuff, he's kind of got this like junior varsity assistant gopher person who takes care of all the details and the not so important stuff while he's out doing the important stuff. Now, the problem with that is the translation of the word helper. You see, Psalm chapter 33, verse 20 says, "The Lord is my help." It's the exact same word. It's the Hebrew word avar. It means to surround. It's used sometimes in the context of saving. It means mainly protector. So I think that you can translate that term helper better as protector. So now let's just summarize what we're learning. That in the context of mutually submitting to one another, men and women, according to Ephesians chapter 5, we find that women are somehow connected, created in the context of beauty to do what? To be part of the protection, somehow in the kingdom, in the management, the economy of God, that God is working them towards that end. And you say, well, now, wait a minute. I mean, I don't know if that's what I'm supposed to do. If I'm supposed to lead, if I'm supposed to nurture, supposed to love, and all those kinds of things, what does that look like? Well, then in the context of those things, God's created you to lead, and you're like, well, now wait a minute. But what about that Colossians 3 verse about that whole submission thing? And listen, don't discount it. Are there moments in the context of your marriage where the husband prays and the wife prays and you guys pray together and then you think and then you talk and maybe you're not on exactly the same page about a specific decision. So you go back and he prays and she prays and you pray together and then you get together and you think and you talk and maybe it comes right down to the decision and you're just not on the same page. God, does he ask you as women to defer in those moments to your husband's leadership? Yes. But can I also say that that is very, very, very rare? I can think of maybe one or two times that that's happened in 20 plus years of marriage between me and Angel. See, God's designed us as in oneness. And so I believe that the majority of the time, he's gonna bring us together in those decisions in oneness. And you don't just throw out that thing and play it like a trump card all the time. That's not how it's supposed to work. And by the way, you have a great example of that in the person of Jesus. He comes to the earth, lives his life, does ministry, gets right down to the end the night before he's going to the cross, right? He goes to the Garden of Gethsemane and he prays, what? Father, the cross is coming tomorrow. If there's another way, let's do that. If not what? Not my will, but your will be done. Here's God, a very God who can do anything he wants, and he voluntarily, in a sign of what? Of weakness? No, in a sign of strength, he submits his will to his Father's will. So God is not asking you to do anything that he is not, that he's not already done. So if God is asking you to be something different than maybe what we've dreamed it, what we've been taught it, or how we've thought about it, if God is asking you to lead, how do you do that? What's right there in the story of Genesis. As the story moves along, what happens? Adam and Eve, they're in the garden one day. Eve begins a conversation with the serpent. Adam and Eve eat the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And out of that, sin is introduced into the world. And there are consequences because of sin. There are consequences for Adam, there are consequences for Eve, and there are consequences for the serpent. Let's look at the consequences that Eve was given in Genesis chapter 3, verse 16. To the woman he said, I will surely multiply your pain in childbearing. In pain you shall bring forth children. Your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you. Now there's a lot to say there, and I don't have time to talk about all of it. But one of the things that jumps out at me is that sin wrecks Eve's relationships. Like I said, we don't have time to talk about all the different ways that that happens, but one way it says in that verse is that he says that her pain will be multiplied in childbearing. So you think about that for a minute. You think pre-fall, sin never enters into the world. What was having a baby gonna be like? I mean, is it gonna be something akin to, you know, taking a nap and waking up? Is that what, pre-fall? But all of a sudden after that, everything's different. I think about for me and Angie, when we were in the hospital and Dylan was about to be born, our second child. And there was a little bit of a delay. The doctor, there were Angie and there was another lady in there and she had some specific needs. So the doctor went over here first and the guy who was doing the epidural and all that went over here first. And because of that, Angie's pain, the contractions were getting tighter and it was starting to, you know, more pain and more pain and more pain. And I was trying to think of something I could say to lighten the mood just a little bit. You know, it's like, let everybody just take a deep breath. And so in between contractions, I look over to Angie and I say, you know, this is all Eve's fault. Yeah. That's about the reaction I got from her too that day. It was kind of like, And then she gave me that look like, no, this is all your fault. This is not Eve's fault. This is your fault. So when Genesis says that your pain is multiplied in childbearing there, the word is broader than childbearing in terms of just having or giving birth to a child, but it's given really in the context of raising children. See, the effects of the curse, they hurt Eve's relationships. Now I want you to listen real carefully to what I'm about to say. And again, I wanna be real clear. I'm not saying this is all women and all men, but generally speaking, across cultures and across times, When one of the children in the home has a problem at a young age with education and learning, who is more concerned? Who jumps in? I would say, generally speaking, it's mom. When one of the children has a relational difficulty with another kid in the neighborhood or another kid at school, who generally jumps in and tries to help with that, talk through that, and figure that out? Generally speaking, I think you can say, across cultures and across times, that's mom. Why is that? It's because that in the context of mutual submission, God has created women, right, in the context to match the beauty of his creation to the degree that women show us the nurturing, nourishing side of God, without which, without them, we would not see nearly as clearly. I want to say that to you again. What we see in the context of womanhood and motherhood is that it's really a celebration of the nurturing side of God, of part of the character of God that you show us. This is what makes women incredibly, incredibly important, among other things, is that you help us see part of the side of God that we would not otherwise see. So in the economy of God, in the plan for the kingdom, you are a primary player in that we see God better through you and because of you. I'll show you how it works. We'll pick up two more verses in Genesis 3 and Genesis 4. Genesis 3:20. The man called his wife's name Eve because she was the mother of all living. You skip down to chapter 4, verse 1. Now Adam knew his wife. She conceived and bore Cain, saying, I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord. Now, what's interesting to me about that is that in chapter 3, Adam names her Eve, mother of all living. You get down to chapter 4, verse 1, and it says, then she is pregnant, she gives birth to Cain, and she has a son. Those two things seem out of order, don't they? Adam calls Eve the mother of all living before she ever has what? Before she ever has children. And we talked about this a few years ago, just briefly, but just to bring it up again, Eve is a mother before she ever has children. It matches a passage that we, like I said, talked about a couple years ago, Isaiah chapter 54. See, hardwired into females is this idea of nurturing and nourishing that we see in and around them. It's not necessarily about having children, but it's more about the character of God that you show us, that we see in you, and how you nurture and nourish other people. And it's not always soft and kind and tender like it's depicted to be. Sometimes nurturing and nourishing someone else's soul means that you move into their lives and you speak truth to them aggressively, helping them move forward in their relationship with God. You're here today and you're a single gal and you're dating a guy, and listen, he's just not tracking spiritually. So you're gonna what? You're gonna go to him and you're gonna nurture him, nourish him. You're gonna speak truth to him. You're gonna say, look, you know, you look like Chris Hemsworth, but I'm looking for somebody who loves me like Christ loves the church. And you're great at Call of Duty on Xbox. You're still living with your mom when you're 24, and that's awesome. That's all great. You look like Thor, but I'm out, okay? And so what you're doing is you are what? You're nurturing him as a man. You're nourishing his soul as a man. You're moving him forward, hopefully, prayerfully, towards the reality of what biblical manhood is all about. As a parent, sometimes you get a reflection of this. Our youngest child just finished a project at school, her autobiography project that our kids have all done at their school in the same grade. And sometimes you get to see these pictures, these moments of parenting. It just stirs up all these emotions in you, right? So here's what I thought we would do. I thought we would throw a little music behind, and I'm just gonna read you this little paragraph of one of these things that our daughter said about us. And so you all know the Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, you know, you know, up above the world, so you know the whole thing. So here's what we're gonna do. I'm gonna have you all hum it in the background while I read this wonderful little paragraph. All right, you ready? Here you go, I'll get you started. Thank you. One of the funny stories I have is when I was 2. My parents were downstairs and my siblings were in their rooms. I went into my parents' bathroom and got 2 things out of the cabinet. Any guesses? Orange nail polish and Lysol. I covered myself, and in the process, I covered the bathroom. My parents knew that when they didn't hear me for a long while, I was getting into something bad. They came up and I got some hard whoopings on the backside. Are you kidding me? By the way, that's whoopings, W-O-O-P-E-N-S. That's Southern Ohio coming out of my daughter. I was pretty proud. It's pretty proud about that. I remember what a horrible experience it was when Angie gave Sylvia all those whoopings. That was okay, maybe it was both of us, but listen, you may choose to discipline differently in your home, and if you do, that's great. But what were we doing in the process? We were nurturing and nourishing her. As a matter of fact, her next little line in the book says, it hurt, but I learned that there are certain things that I don't do in the house. We're nurturing and nourishing her soul. And however you choose to do that, discipline your family, is up to you. But that's part of the process of nourishment, of nurturing, of moving her along towards her relationship with God. I love it when at times young women in our church, young moms, young women will come to me and say, you know what, Dean, what would be great is if I could just have a young mom or an older mom, maybe just an older lady to come alongside me and help me navigate life. I'm making all these decisions. I'm in my 20s now. Some of these decisions are going to affect me for years, and I could really just use some help. And it seems like that almost always about that time that God brings to me an older an older mom, a lady who's been through her 20s and been through her 30s, and she says, you know what, if there's ever a younger lady, a younger mom, a younger woman who could use some help and some mentoring, I'd love to help. Now, why do we do that? Because the New Testament says that the older women should nurture or nourish the younger women. It's gospel reality in the New Testament. It's how God has hardwired you to work. And we see the beauty of God in you in that. And even then, I know there's tension about just about motherhood. Being a stay-at-home mom has kind of fallen on hard times, right? In our country. But being around, watching it, seeing it, you have a little one or little ones who are demanding of your time and attention 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's an incredibly difficult job. And at the same time, there are other women who say, yeah, but you know, in our country, women are discriminated against in the workforce. And so women should be out there. They should be working. And they feel very fulfilled in their careers. So which one of those is right? Which one of those is wrong? Which one of those is right for you? You pray through it. Which one is right for your marriage? Which one is right for your family? You pray that through and you take that in front of God and lay it in front of Him and let him speak to it. And even in the spectrum, I would say that almost all moms struggle with feelings of insecurity. How am I doing? Am I doing enough? Am I doing well enough? What's the impact of this decision years and years and years from now? So what we did was we got some moms together from our church and we asked them that question. We said, what's the most difficult thing about being a mom? And then unbeknownst to them, we kind of worked behind the scenes through their husbands. And we asked their kids to speak to that in some way. We caught it all on video. Our worship and arts team did an incredible job. So watch the video with me.
All the things that most women kind of define themselves by, I'm not good at any of those things.
Are they going to be remembering all the angry moments?
The guilt that I feel when I'm not with my children.
Probably the fear of failure, just that somehow I'm gonna mess these boys up.
I worry a lot about all the things that I do too much of, like texting and yelling and being cranky, or the things I don't do enough of, probably spending time, and I think, am I enough?
Being soft enough so that my kids feel like they can approach me, seek my counsel, and know that I'm going to give them grace when they make mistakes.
Whenever you're in a room with her, it's so joyful and fun, and everybody's like laughing, and she loves to get our family together and just have fun.
That she gives me lots of grace.
I can't imagine life without you.
Time that I make a mistake and mess up, she doesn't only forgive me, but she also comes alongside me and wants to help me.
I enjoy hanging around you because we have so much fun together and I can just be myself.
She does very fun things with me.
When I think of you, three words come to mind: love, nurture, and strength.
And she's just so nice because she gives me lots of love and all that.
I hope you realize just how much you mean to me and how much I'll brag about you.
But instead of giving us endless chores and taking free time for yourself, you sacrifice for us, and your kindness is almost impossible to repay.
It is easy for me to admit to you things I have done wrong because I always know you love me and will forgive me no matter what.
I think that we have not done fantastically well. I think that the Lord just says, they're mine and they're on loan and I've got your back.
It's nice to hear that she admires me, because I think so often with my own insecurities, I worry, am I enough? Does she feel loved? Does she does she see how much I love her even when I mess up and have to apologize? And
it's worth it all. Every difficulty, every challenge, every frustration, I think it's worth it all.
The word that comes to mind is redeemed, that he's even redeeming what I think is, this horrible, ugly moment. And he says, yeah, maybe, but there's gonna be beauty that comes out of that.
This is special because it shows me that God is putting grace on situations that I can feel are very ugly and very desperate, and somehow they're being filtered and they're being received as still love.
For her to see that, you know, helps me know that God has, you know, is changing me and working in my life, you know, because I think that it's so easy to revert back to what you know, growing up.
I think that one of the things that stands out to me in the video, among a number of things, is when Sarah says, the thing that comes to mind is the word redeemed. That even in the most difficult moments, the moments where you think, man, I'm not doing well here, the moments I feel like I'm failing, God uses even that to move our children along towards his glory, because he's that transcendent, he's that big, he's that powerful. Now, bring us back and wrapping us around the original idea, I would say this. There's this verse in the New Testament that sometimes is taken out of context, sometimes hard to figure out. It's in Galatians, and it says, along these lines, there's a list of things, and it says, listen, in Jesus Christ, there's neither slave nor free. There's neither Jew nor Gentile. There's neither male nor female. And the historian Thomas Cahill says, this is, in antiquity, the first egalitarian writing in world history. You say, what do you mean by egalitarian? It's the first declaration written amongst a group of people that man and woman are equal. So I would just say that the message that we are given a lot of times about what Christianity says and teaches about women is it's either, you know, maybe untrue in people's lives, and if however they interpret it, that's okay. But I'm saying when you come to the scriptures and what the scriptures say, and it makes perfect sense to me why you see it so clearly in the life of Jesus. It makes perfect sense to me that in a culture that Jesus lived in, where if you wanted to have a synagogue in a village, you had to have 10 people who said they would attend the synagogue, and women didn't count in those 10. But when you look at the ministry of Jesus, he calls women to come and be his followers and sit at his feet and listen and hear his teaching. In a culture where Orthodox men would wake up every morning and pray one of the same prayers they would pray, God, thank you that I'm not a Gentile, a slave, or a woman. Jesus has the longest theological conversation in the Gospels with who? With the woman at the well. That in a culture where a woman's testimony was not admissible in court, even if she was an eyewitness to a crime, it didn't count in court. God uses women to verify the resurrection. It is no shock to me at all that in the most crucial moment of Jesus's life, when he's up there hanging on the cross, physically exasperated, in excruciating pain, he looks down in the breath of a moment on the cross, and he says to the Apostle John, who's there, and to his mother, who's there, woman, behold your son. Son, behold your mother. It was absolutely critical to Jesus that his mother was cared for in the last moments of his life. Because what you learn about Jesus in his mission and coming to us is that he has nourished and nurtured our souls. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're here today and you call yourself a believer or you don't. I don't think you can deny that we live in a flawed, broken world. I don't think there's anybody in the room that would say, you know what, I'm perfect. I've never done anything wrong. But we're all messed up. Sin has messed up our relationship with God, but Jesus came, left heaven to redeem it. So that even though you and I are undeniably flawed, we are unbelievably loved through the cross. The New Testament says it this way, that in that while we were yet sinners, you and I, broken people, Christ died for us. And if you're here today and you don't have that relational connectivity with God that comes through the person of the cross, to the degree that you see what we sang earlier is true of your life, that you would say, listen, the very breath in my lungs belongs to God, so everything in my life, everything that rolls out of me ought to fall onto the altar of praise and honor to Him. If you don't have that relationship with God, there is no better day, there's no better hour, there's no better moment than to take that step today, this hour, this moment, right now. And I would love to help you do that. Let's pray together. Father, I pray for anybody who's here now this morning who doesn't have a relationship with you, that God, this morning for them, maybe you're churning something in their spirit, maybe through thoughts about their own mothers or about their wives, they sense and see the nurturing, nourishing character that you have, that you displayed for us on the cross. They're drawn to it. And God, I pray this morning that they'll surrender to it. And we just continue to pray right now. If that's you, you're here and you want to begin that relationship with God this morning, what I'm going to do is I'm going to pray up here, and if this prayer that I pray helps you, you can pray it with me right there in your seat. You don't have to say it exactly like I say it. You can say it, pray in your own words if you want to. But essentially what you're doing is you're saying, Jesus, on the basis of the cross, on the basis of the fact I can't fix myself, I'm putting my life in your hands this morning. If you want to do something like that, just pray, dear Jesus, thank you for dying for me. Thank you for paying for my sins on the cross. Please forgive me of my sins. This morning I confess that I'm unable to fix myself, that I need you. So I put my life under your control. I'll follow you no matter what. Thank you for salvation. As we continue just to keep our heads bowed and our eyes closed, real personal time for people in God. The scriptures are clear that whenever you take that step, you're not going to do it alone. You need biblical community around you. So I'm just going to ask that you would give me the honor of being the first person that you tell you've taken that step just by slipping your hand up right now. Nobody's looking around. Nobody's going to point at you, ask you to give a speech or anything. Would you do that right now? Just slip your hand up. Say, yeah, that was me. Thanks. Yeah, just slip them up and take them right back down. Say, yeah, that was me this morning. Next thing I'd like for us to do is just, we're just going to take a moment this morning and we're going to pray for the moms and the wives that are in our lives. So husbands, if your wife is next to you, maybe take her by the hand. Kids, maybe put your hand on your mom's shoulder, or maybe you're a teenager in the room, you're not sitting by your mom, just real quietly right now in the quiet of this moment, just stand up and sneak over to wherever your mom is. You want to pray for her and with her. What I'm going to do is I'm going to pray, kind of open up a little time for us, and then I'm going to be quiet and I'm going to let you pray. Pray for your wife, pray for your mom, and then I'll close that time in prayer again, okay? Father, thank you for the wonder of the women that you have brought into our lives. They teach us, God, so much, not just in the information that they share, but they teach us more about the nurturing side of who you are, how much you want to nourish and strengthen our souls. And God, I pray this morning that among the insecurities that exist there, that you would encourage their hearts and that you, God, would bear them up as only you can. Now, I'll give you time to go ahead and just take a minute here and pray. Thank you. whispers of the prayers that are going on in the room today, Lord, I pray they will rise up in front of you like incense, that they would, that God, they would bless you. They would be to your praise. And God, I know that today is a very difficult day for some who may be lost, who've lost their mom this year or recently. Or Lord, for the single moms who are here today, no tougher job than trying to play dual roles. And Lord, I pray that today they would be uniquely encouraged and strengthened. For couples who are here today, God, and they're walking down the road where they love to have children and don't have them yet, God, I pray that you would be near them, God, that you would, like the Old Testament says, that you would wrap them in your wings, and God, they would feel sheltered in you. Lord, you are so very good to us, to show us yourself in so many different ways. But in particular today, in this moment right now, we're just saying thank you for doing that through the women in our lives. It's in your name we pray. Amen.